Hello there and welcome to Full Chat with me, David Prutton.
And me, Ewan Thomas, celebrating all things we love about being on two wheels. Now, Full Chat is powered by Bikesure. As the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bikesure will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping you save money on your annual bike, scooter and moped insurance.
Don't forget to press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from.
Now, today's guest is simply a legend. Listen, people throw that word around, but he really is a pure motorcycling legend. We could stay here all day and list all his podiums, all his victories, but we literally would have no time to chat to him. So forget what he's done for now. Let's just introduce him, the one and only, the brilliant John McGuinness.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Morning, mate.
You forgot the MBE, mate. I think you've got one there, mate.
MBE. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Do you use your MBE? Because I've got some of my mates are like, oh, that's quite cool. Other mates are like, that's a bit pretentious. So I kind of, if I'm trying to get a point across, or if I'm complaining to someone like my gas bill's too much, and I'll DM them, I'll always put you and Thomas MBE at the end. But normally I won't mention it.
I threw it in trying to get some planning at home for a little pond or like a little lake at the front of my house, and I threw the MBE in and all that sort of nonsense. And I've got the Freedom of Lancaster and Morecambe as well, but it fell on a bit of a deaf ear, that one. It probably went the other way for me, but my missus says that stands for Morecambe Bend anyway, so we'll leave it at that.
I think that's brilliant. When I got that MBE right, I'd actually just previously gone to Buckingham Palace for something else. Like, it was an athlete. It was nowhere near as big, but
something else.
No, it was something else, but I got stuck in traffic, right? So I actually got there late, and Prince Philip's, he wouldn't wait for me. Like, he went. And the press picked up on it. And when they announced I've got an MBE, they put in the Daily Mail or whatever, must be early. Like, yeah, just totally rinsed me for it. But yeah. Yeah, where's your MBE, Prats? Have you got any services to football?
If you'd have ever seen me play, you would know I would not get anything for services to football. My God, I did make it look hard. But I do feel left out. I mean, that's not many things that have surprised me about you and Thomas, but I should have known you and that you had an MBE. Anyway, we're not talking about you. We're talking to John McGuinness. We've got John McGuinness on the podcast.
I got mad at Windsor Castle off Princess Anne. It was quite cool, actually. She said to me, she says, oh, you're still in one piece then, she said. I was like, oh, yeah, I am, to be fair. And I said, I tell you what, I wouldn't even get one of them horses like you used to do. And she was like, yes. I was just like, and then you get the nod, don't you? The nod means like, right, next one. And then
you get a set amount of time, John, for a little bit of small talk with the Royal.
Yeah, you get a bit of banter. And I said, she says, how fast are you going on these bikes? I said, about 205-ish, something like that, with a bit of wind behind you, the northwest. She's like, it's like queuing up to get on a fairground ride for a bit. You'll queue up in this lane and two by two and in you go. But it was funny.
To be able to be in that position, given, I mean, the career speaks for itself. The career that keeps going speaks for itself. I mean, the Isle of Man and the TT, I mean, we've spoken about it a few times on the podcast over the series that we've done, John, and we're obsessed with it. We're obsessed with the thrill of it, the skill of it, just the sheer kind of spectacle of what it is. I mean, the fact, 23 wins to date, you've raced all over the world. You've seen so many different racetracks, so many different vantage points from the seat of a motorcycle. But is the TT in a class of its own for you?
Yeah, 100%. It's, like I said, I've done world supersport, I've done world endurance, I've done MotoGPs with wild cards and stuff. But when you sit on the start line of a TT, there's something different about it. It's the only place where you sort of don't have a warm-up lap and you sit on the grid, take your helmet off, put your sunglasses on, bit of nonsense TV stuff, and then you do a warm-up lap, then you go, you just walk up to your bike. You know, your boys have got your bike, you're thinking, oh, I hope everything's tight and everything's ready to go. And it's probably one of the only places where my son and my dad are on the start line as well, and the wife. I'm a bit superstitious as well, so it's like, kiss my voodoo doll on my helmet. I put a penny down my leathers. It's the only place in the world where I put a lucky penny down my leathers. I mean, that penny's been done some laps, I'll tell you, around there. And then, do you know what the funny thing about that? You never know where it's going to end up. I've had it in my underpants, I've had it on my arse crack. You just never know where it's going. You get a bronze out, you get a bronze, is it copper or whatever it is, the outline of the Queen on some certain parts of your anatomy. But honestly, you know, like, you always have one of them awkward, you know, lads, you know them awkward dad hugs. I don't really hug your dad, really, but it's a bit like, like,
Yeah.
All right, we're just about to set off on this task, you know, and then it's eerie, you know. You're looking down Bray Hills. It's you know, you just pull up to this like gantry thing, and last few years I've been number one as well, so I've been the first guy away. So yeah, it's nerve wracking. It is very nerve wracking, and there's lots of things go through your head until you drop the clutch, and then you drop the clutch, and it's down to business.
That sense of, because it's, I mean, by definition of what that particular course is and motorcycle racing itself, it's highly skilled. But as we know, there's a high level of risk to it, even for someone as experienced as you, John. But without getting too morbid right off the bat in our chat, is there that element? You talk about being superstitious, about the lucky penny, about the looking over to your loved ones of, let's just have a quick nod here, because...
Yeah,
the sliding doors moment means this could be the last nod and a wave and see you later, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's so hard to explain. It's so hard to get it out of your system as well. You know, it's like I wouldn't say a drug. I hate that word. It's like a disease is a bad word, and it's like something that's sort of encrusted.
It's an addiction.
It is an addiction, and it's, I'm a creature of habit as well. You know, I actually love what I do. I love the lead up to it. I love the anticipation. I love the fact that we're going there. I get nervous about it. And when I get there, I'm thinking, what am I doing here? This is nuts. Why am I doing it? But nothing gives me greater pride than to pull a factory Honda shirt on and be the number one leading Honda rider, you know. So, and at the minute, I'm still competitive. Ish, you know, to be fair, there's probably four riders that are out of my reach at the minute. I can't, you know, I used to be able to pull rabbits out of the hat now and again, but I can't anymore. I'm coming up to 53, which is an old codger, really, for a bike racer. But I'm still holding my own, you know. And on a nice day, when the sun's shining and the bike's working good, your slick tyres are working good, you're hitting all the apexes, everything's working. As you know, anybody who's any good at the sport, it's the best thing in the world, you know. And the nice thing for me is I don't get worried that I'm fifth or sixth. I'm still competing. I'm still enjoying it. You know, the till's still ringing, running a few quid. You know, ego's still like, everybody's peeking away. I get to, and weirdly, like, there's loads of other doors opening for me left, right, and centre, you know, for like ambassador stuff when I do hang my leathers up. But, and the nice thing as well is everybody that's around me is with me, you know, wife, dad, everybody's nobody's standing in my way going, you know, I need to pack this in, John. I'll know when it's time to stop. But
that's a nice position to be in though, isn't it? Because for a lot of sports people, with all due respect, of your age at 53, they'd be long retired. But the fact you are competitive, the fact that your family clearly love and support what you do, and why would you hang your levers up? Because you're still competitive. Yeah. As you said, you'll know the day will come when you'll go, this doesn't feel right anymore. But going back to the TT and the fact that you've won it so many times, I mean, obviously we've established the danger element and the skill factor and the concentration you need. You're so used to that course. Can you ever switch off? Do you ever feel yourself daydreaming around thinking, I know this like the back of my hand? Or every year, are you looking out for a new bit of grit on the road or a new slippy bit, you know, because you know it so well. Is it second nature, or do you still have to be totally on it every year? Can you ever just switch off?
No, you can't switch off at all. You know, that's the bit when it will bite you. And, you know, it's little things, tiny little things where, you know, the water board might have ripped up some section of the course through Kurt Michael and they put a new pipe down. It's just little things like that. Or somebody's, you know, weirdly, a few years ago, there were some trees had some disease, so they chopped a load of trees down. And the track looks so different when there's a load of trees down. And there can always be a little bit of wind can catch you out, a little bit of sun can catch you out. The sun's in different places at different times of the day. You know, you always got to be super, super alert. And the bikes are different every time. You know, I've gone from two strokes to four strokes to fuel injected to fly by wire to traction control. I've had to go through three generations. So I have to keep my eye bang on the ball, you know. And I even when I was winning as well, it sounds really mad, but I always felt like I had a little bit in reserve, which might sound a bit like cocky, but I genuinely
earned the right to be cocky, John. I'll be brutally honest.
No, but I don't like being. I'm not trying to be a smart ass, but no. I had the right people around me. I had the right bike, the right tide loss, things like that. And I always felt like, you know, that I was always riding within myself. Because, like, right at the start there, you know, about how dangerous it is, I've worked it out, I've done about 50,000 miles around there. So,
Jesus.
You know, if you're nuts, you're going to last 5 minutes. Yeah. You can't hit all them apexes all the time on all them different types of bikes if you're mad, you know. Mm. I think I'm sort of,
I think I read an interview with you, John, and it was, and there's been a couple of friends of mine, as you've been touring around and bobbing up in various places, because a very good mate of mine that lives just a few doors down from me, I said about speaking to you today, and he's, oh, I went to go and see him. It was Halifax maybe, or Guy, I can't remember where it was, but and chatting away and kind of holding court and Q&As and stuff. And he said he vividly remembers someone saying to you about being, oh, you must be a mad so-and-so. And you very, just what you've done there, very succinctly saying, well, if you were crackers, you wouldn't make it round. You wouldn't do 50,000 miles round that. It's, and that's the thing where that we've seen, and having had the pleasure, you and I, of speaking to motorcycle racers, is it's the skill set is just utterly sublime. The problem solving in microseconds that you've got to do going around that. You don't have to be crackers. You have to know exactly what you're doing. You have to be extremely composed, and you have to be able to process information, which, how much of that would you say is natural to you on a bike? And how much of that would you say has come accrued through experience and having been worked on? Because it is as delicate and finite a skill as you could possibly wish for, because you get one thing wrong and you can see what happens on the other side of it, don't you?
Yeah, you're in trouble if it goes wrong.
great understatement.
It sort of depends on which part of the track, but it's not going to be pretty on some of the faster parts of the track. But it's a great question, that. You slightly curveball me because I normally get all the same questions, but this is quite. I'm quite interested to listen to what you guys have got to say, which is cool, but for me, everybody has their own style. You know, if you're playing snooker, you hit the ball on that corner and you spin it back to this, and you know, whatever, you line it up for the yellow or whatever, but, or you're hitting, throwing darts, it's got to go in that bit. But everybody has their own approach, their own styles, their own position on the bike, their own views and how it all goes. And I always say to people that you sort of don't get a handbook, you know, to do it. You have to go and adapt your own style. And is it natural? For some people, it is natural. Like Michael Dunlop's super natural. Peter Hickman was really natural. There was a guy called David Jeffries who was a giant who won 9 TTs in 3 years. He was really natural. Like, you know, he was just effortless, not like, the physicality of it for him, and an hour and 45 minutes on the bike, he was just pulling wheelies, doing skids, waving at his sister. Where something like Hutchie and Hutchinson, who's won a lot of TTs, has to work hard on it. You know, he's got the six pack, he trains hard, he thinks about it more, he has to have his bike 100% right, correct, and set up correctly how he wants it, which is fine. Some riders can ride around problems and things like that. So, David Todd, who's the next, you know, he's super natural. Where my teammate Dean Harrison's probably not, you know, he's working out, he's finding the problems and figuring the problems out. So, yeah, very difficult one to answer.
Therein lies the sheer wonderment of the whole thing. I sometimes find, and this isn't a direct comparison at all, John, but That lazy one where people talk about footballers not being able to articulate necessarily. Or Wayne Rooney, quite quiet on TV. Yeah, but the problem-solving ability of an international elite player is far greater than the ability to be able to go, can you be really funny and insightful and give us tell us exactly how it works? Because I think, John, if you could have tell us exactly how it works, that sense of being able to do it in the moment probably won't come as naturally to you, even though you do work tremendously hard at it, doesn't it? That almost tends to, that's what I'm kind of getting at with elite level sportsmen like yourself, like the top echelon of their particular sport. That ability to just do it is in your bones.
Well, one of the things that, like, did shock me a bit at the time, because I'm sort of trying, I don't give people too much in, not that I don't want to give them too much information, especially younger riders. I worry about them. They worry me because I don't want them to get hurt. Because in the past, I had a real good friend, a good journalist called Gus Scott. His real name was Ian Scott, but they called him Gus Scott, and he was a fantastic rider. And I was the guy that was the last piece of the jigsaw, really. I said, look, he was humming and hawing about doing the TT. And like, and he was so good, so smooth, so stylish, great journalist, good rider. I mean, a lot of journalists have failed motorbike races and then they go journalists riding bikes. But he could actually do both. And he went to the TT in 05, and then a marshal ran out in front of him, and they both got killed, the pair of them, right? So I'm on the podium spraying champagne because I won the senior TT. And when I came down, I just felt empty. I couldn't believe it, because if I hadn't said do the TT, he probably wouldn't have done it. And I said, do it, you'll be great. And I remember being at the funeral and his mum and dad looking at me, like giving me that, you know what I'm saying? I felt guilty anyway. So I always think, you know, if you want to go and do the TT, you know, you go and do it, you go and learn your trade. I'll give you little bits if you want snippets. And because it's too much to take in. It's like, it's apprenticeship. It's a 3 to 5 year deal if you want. Some get there quicker. But what I was initially going to say was Josh Brooks, who's now gone into that sort of top 4 or 5 elite gang, 133 mile an hour man. When he rode for Norton, I rode for Norton. And the Norton job was, honestly, I mean, I never looked great in a chrome suit. I looked like a fat chicken in tinfoil at his friends. So, and it, you know, God knows what happened there. Anyway, that was a part of my journey that I want to forget. But I was with Josh Brooks, and I'm going around in a car going, you know, watch this, watch that, but I watched the... And he sat there and he wasn't really listening. And I thought, ignorant, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then he said to me, John, I really appreciate it. I respect you so much, he says, but I just want to do it my way. So after all them years doing what we're doing, I was like, shot to bits. But I went, as if to say, first initial thought was, you dick.
Yeah.
And then eventually I sat down and thought, he's got it right.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose everyone's different, aren't they? So different approaches. Some people like to like psych up before a race in my sport. Some people like to be really quiet. They want to be in the start line. They want to be calm. But what do you feel like now when you sit here? You're still going, you're still competitive. You must, though, be very proud that you've inspired. And I know you spoke, and it's a sad story about your journalist friend, but you obviously inspired him. He's seen you compete and do well. And there must be racers who are coming through now who weren't even born when you were first doing the TT. What is it like when you go there still? And you're a huge name in the sport. Do you walk around like, and obviously you're a humble guy, I get that, but you must be really proud that you've inspired a generation of riders.
Yeah, I am. You know, I get them coming to me. There's a younger generation now who they need 3 or 4 years, really, before they can run right at the front. But I am really. I just enjoy it. I enjoy seeing people do what they want to do, you know, and enjoy what they're doing. You know, there's a lot of people that I could do that, you know. Well, do it then, you know. Yeah. Stand in the pub, stand in the pub giving it.
Yeah.
But like anybody who gets off their ass and gets an international license, which is hard to get to start with. I know it's expensive, the budget, the bikes, it's so difficult. But you see people maxed out on credit cards, all the family have chucked everything in to go and get on that start line. And, you know, where I was at the start, I never had anything. I lived on my missus' sofa for 7 years. I said, I know where to live but I put everything into my racing. And to see some of these guys do it, you know, you've got to be proud of him in a lot of ways,
And I think you should be proud as well that you clearly, I'm going to call you the godfather of the TT, but you clearly care about these riders. Like you said, there's a few young riders out there that might be a bit reckless or they're not quite ready. I think it's a really good testament to you as a person, forget a motorbike rider, but you clearly are a really good person inside to not only be racing against these people, but still actually in the corner of your mind, be a bit worried about them as well. So I think, you know, you should take a lot of credit for how you are.
I do worry about them because ultimately it's, you know, and I remember when I was injured in 2017 and 18, I bust my leg quite bad and I was at the TT not riding. And you know, I was seeing a couple of riders a bit wide here and then a little bit too tight on the, you know, and I went back into the paddock and just sort of just be careful of that. Just be careful, you know. I'm not trying to be a dick and dictate to them, but, and then it's really up to them, really, whether they take that on board or not. But I know, I've seen it. I've done, you know, 108 starts at TT now. So I've seen it a lot over the years. So I just want to look out for them. And we need the next generation of riders as well, you know. I mean, that TT survived so much. COVID, foot and mouth, two world wars. I mean, it's been through everything. And it's still strong, you know.
That's quite pertinent to you, though, isn't it? Given that window of your career where if things had gone... I mean, 23 wins today is ridiculous anyway. But do you feel that there's a little gap there for that 2 years where you could have amassed more wins and you could... I mean, the legacy is a big word. And generationally, you talk about these young riders coming through and there'll always be somebody snapping at your heels and somebody snapping at their heels, and that's just the very nature of professional sport. You roll round, you get older, you move on, someone comes in. Is there a little bit of, it's slightly hypothetical and a bit what if, but maybe the numbers could be slightly different given that 2 year gap that was obviously forced, not just on the biking world, but everyone really.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't dwell on it. I wouldn't, you know, I've led two senior TTs by a mile, and I had a chain snap and a clutch started slipping. I mean, the end. I mean, that track's brutal on the bikes. It's brutal on the rider. You know, the bikes that get put through so much stress and strain, and you know I was leading the senior TT in 04 on a Yamaha, and my mechanic shouted in my ear, "Oh, this is," because he had a really weak clutch in them, and I was like, they were like, "Go easy on the clutch," and I'm like, like a dick, and I burnt the clutch out in the pit stop. And as soon as I set off, I was ruined. But you know, you're never too old to learn. You make mistakes and you learn things like that. But you know, 17 was a bad year for me. I got injured quite bad at Northwest on a bike I shouldn't have been on. And all the years of experience I've had, a dicky bird was saying, don't ride it, because the throttle had an issue with a fly-by-wire throttle and it accelerated on its own. So I went through the fence at the Northwest. I lost 52 millimetres of my leg. I had to grow 52 mil back in my tibia and fibia, broke my back, all my ribs. I'm laid there thinking, you know, 17 was finished, 18 were finished, never recovered. You know, 19 was a known job, but injuries are part of the game.
Yeah.
And worse, more than injuries, you know, the ultimate. But you know, I went and decided to do that Norton thing, fell out with Honda. It was like getting divorced. It was a tough time. You know, them years were tough. I was determined to ride again, determined to, like, come back to where I was. And there's no way. I landed on the golf course, and all, and I hate golf. I landed on the 8th green of a golf, so like, I went through the fence and thought, there's no way I'm finishing my career.
The irony. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it was tough times, and could I have won a few more? Probably. Should I have won a few more? In hindsight, yes. Did the chain snap for another reason? I believe things happen for reasons. You know, I remember in 2009 when the chain snapped, I was so enjoying it. I had a teammate that was nibbling me a little bit. He was getting under my skin a little bit. And I just wanted to tighten the screw and drill him into the weeds in the senior, which I was doing. And the chain snapped and I was like, felt, you know, but I tell you another story about that. This is a bell to this. So I'm coming out of Parliament Square. It's a stop corner, a first gear right and the left. Come out of the left, change gear from first to second, chain snap. So that's it, you're finished. So I coast up to the left-hand side, a place called Mayhill, bumpy right-hander. And I'm just stood giving it like F's and Jeff's and headbutt screen, absolutely spewing. I just looked up across like that to me left, and there was an old deer, right, an old Manx lady, just sat with her hands on the wall. She went, "Are you all right?" I'm like, I was just about to start firing a load of Fs in there, and she went, "Yeah, all right." She said, "Do you want a can of Stella?" Right. So this old deer, I said, "Do you know what? I will." So I leant my motorbike against her garden wall, went into her garden, just sat in the garden watching the race. I've got a can of Stella. She made me a massive cheese sandwich. But you know them cheese sandwich is just a wedge, like cut like that. Yeah. I'm like munching through this massive cheese sandwich. So by the time teams come to get me, I'm 4 or 5 Stellas in. I'm absolutely pissed out of my head because you can't eat before the race because you're nervous. So I'm fucking sat there leathered in this garden with this old beer. So, you know, every cloud and all that.
But, do you know, I'm not saying things happen for a reason and you lost your race because you were meant to meet that lady, but that's a story she would have loved to have told, as you have done today. But how nice is that you were brought to... I thought you were going to say she offered you a cup of tea, dear, but a Stella... That's
kind of
Stella.
Yeah. Weird, yeah. She had like a case of 4 or whatever in the fridge, but it's just only the TT. Only the TT. Honestly, you know, you break down, somebody's there and somebody's got, you know, flask out or whatever, and then morning practices used to have, but they don't do them anymore, you know. Such, you know, tales go on and on and on, but like, just, she just calmed me down. And you know what? I thought, I really enjoyed the race, though.
Yeah.
I really enjoying it. You know, you only get one chance a year to ride around there. And when the sun's shining and everything's working good, I was on the HM Plan Honda, did the first ever 131 mile an hour lap. You know, I was heading for the flag and then bang, and just going, it's never over till the end, is it? But
do you know what, John? You speak so fondly of the TT and your memories and the riding and when it wasn't going so well, how much you wanted to get back on the bike. Dare I say this, obviously you're 53, we've established this. The day that you do hang up those levers, because for any sports person out there, it can be a real dark place when you have to walk away from something you clearly love and you've done for so long. Do you have an exit plan? And have you psychologically got yourself ready for when you do, I hate the retire word, but step off the bike? Because I know for me personally, when I had to stop running because of injuries, I went through many years of dark days. Why me? Why me? At least you've had the longevity. You're 53 and you're still going strong. But will you ever be able to hang up those levels, or will you always ride as long as you can? Because you might as well keep going. You're doing it.
In my own head, I want to stop. In my own head, that I want to stop when it's time to stop. But I want a dicky bird to tell me to stop. I want it to feel right. I don't know if this makes sense, but in a lot of ways, I want the younger riders to come along, whip my ass, and take me away from that Honda job. Like, there's 3 or 4 lads that are going okay. Similar sort of pace to me, but really, they should be sticking it into me. They should be, like, you know, knocking me off where I am. And I think that will probably be the deciding thing. And I'll go, do you know what? I don't need to hand, because I ride the factory Honda. It's a great team, a great package. And it in a lot of ways, maybe you should go to somebody else, you know. And I get a bit of stick over it and, oh, bang your levers up, you silly old bastard. And it hurts, though. It goes a bit deep, you know. I'm a bit heavy, than some of them riders, but I can pull it off, you know. Just, I don't look right. I've only got tiny legs and a long body, so I never look great in suit anyway. But it's hard for me, but I don't want it to. My window's closing. At the end of the day, law of averages is going to get you at some point. You're going to get another bump. I'm not going to be able to take another big bump, I don't think. That'll finish me off, but I hope not. But I've jammed more into 53 years than a lot of people have. I think, you know, a lot of my mates are 60. They've been married twice. Both ex-wives hate them. The kids hate them because they've been coaching. Whatever, you know the crack. It's just there's a story everywhere. It's a load of nonsense, isn't it? They've done nothing, and then it's just aggro, isn't it? But, man, if that happens to me tomorrow, I'll jam more into the 53 years than a lot of people have. And if anything happens to me, I just hope it's pretty quick and I'm gone. I don't want to be sat there suffering when we're flipping. You know, I just hope it's a big bang, flash of light, and I'm gone. But I don't want that, obviously, but I can ride some classic bikes. I can go and do the Goodwood Festival of Speed. I can go and do the Revival. I can go and this classic TT. I could ride on for another 5, 6 years riding classic bikes. I'm going to itch the scratch. But I'm, you know, and that's great. And, you know, weirdly as well, even, last few years I started number one, so I get caught by some of the fast guys. I love the fact they give me respect, you know, on the track. They'll pass me without striping me. They're not, you know, they just wait patiently, pass me, give me a wave, on they go. And I get loads of enjoyment out of that. That sounds weird, doesn't it? You know, I'm maybe fifth in the race, which is 10-second intervals. So it's a time trial, as you know. So you know, David Toddle catch me and Michael Dunlop would give me a nod and pass me, and I'm thinking, go on, lad, you know, I'm like, go, you know what I mean? I'm seeing what they're doing through my eyes, but I get to see them for a mile or two and off they go into the distance. And I actually love that. I'm still learning from that. You know, some of the lines they're taking, I watch onboard laps of David Toddle and I watch onboard laps of Peter Hickman and them boys. I'm like, oh, they're a gear higher there than me. So I'm still learning, but I still enjoy that bit. And, you know, let's, you know, look into the future, and I got a dicky bird on my shoulder and goes, right, John, stop. And I feel happy about that. I've achieved everything. I've nothing left to prove, but I still, weirdly, still got the bug. And I can't get rid of it. It's just it's ingrained in here.
There's nothing weird about it, John. I mean, your passion, whether you're listening to this or watching this, it just absolutely comes shining out of you. Just a very quick bit of mid-show housekeeping. If you haven't already, please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode as wonderful as this one, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. So that, John, yeah, that's the bug that you got for racing, and that's the bug that you got for competition and going up against all riders from across the world. Does that then transfer into you being able to go for a little Sunday toddle around on two wheels somewhere, being able to just kind of relax and have it as just that pure enjoyment of a ride?
Yeah, very, very rarely. Do you know what the big problem is? I can't get insurance. I can't get motorcycle insurance. If you're telling me you're a bike racer, immediately computer says no, doesn't it? So...
Well, you're on the right. You're on the right podcast, mate. We'll have a word with Bikeshaw, mate. We'll sort it out.
Do you know what's frustrating? I've got about 80 bikes in my bike collection, so I've got lots of bikes. And like, I'd love to go on my KR1S, my Kawasaki KR1S, yeah. Two stroke. It's what I first started racing on. On my little TZR125. I've got an AP50. I had an AP50 when I was 16. I can't go and ride it. I don't want to go far in it. I live in sticks. I want to go like for half an hour, and they'll be bored out of my brains, and they're just anyway. You thought they were magic when you had them. When you ride them now, they're just crap. But I can't just go for a burn on one. So it's...
I would have thought you'd get insurance. Clearly, your track record speaks for itself. Look how many TTs you've won. I mean, the guy can ride a bike.
You would think that you would, you know, think, oh, hang on, you can actually handle about this fella. Anyway, so I did actually go to Jerez last year with Dean Harrison and a couple of sponsors, and we rode from Marbella to Jerez. And I thought it was magic. And I get, do you know what's changed racing, riding on the road is an intercom, them Cardo things. It's great crack. And I thought, I'm not wearing one of them, you look a dick. And I've got a flip front helmet now as well, which you know,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I'd never wear one of them when you were younger. Like, I'm not wearing that. Anyway, we've got flip front, you know, little visor thing. We're talking to lads, taking piss all day, you know, like, great. I really, really enjoyed it. And I tell you what, I've got actually today, and don't laugh, I've got a GB350 Honda coming. So it's a single cylinder, 21 horsepower, GB350. Savage punt here, but they're under $4,000. So I'm having one.
Yeah.
Said to Honda, can I have one of them? Because I went to a launch of them in Portugal. So we're hooring around Portugal on one. And it was with all the, you know, dealer principals and stuff. I just had a laugh. I enjoyed it. And it was just, we were laughing our box off going around at each other. And I thought, I live out near South Lakes. There's a good little road here, Devil's Bridge and a few others. So that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I've just got a GB350 coming. But I've got a 2024 Fireblade in the garage. I never ride it. It's like riding a bloody, you know, I use it for my instructing. I use it for my track days. But I never really go out on the road in it. Because honestly, they are so, so fast.
It's a rocket. Road.
That stiff stuff comes at you so fast, it's unbelievable. Mm.
When you do go out, John, then, and we talk to a lot of people on here, and one of the beauties they love about riding bikes is your visor comes down, you're in your own world, you can be anyone. When you do flip up your helmet and intercom on or not, do people do a double take and go, no wonder that guy was riding a good line out there? It's John McGuinness. Do you get that? Or
yeah, we get a few. I love it, you know. People get a bit sucked into it all and get a bit, pull them out of the depth a little bit. But I just try and stay under the radar. Do you know, I do a lot of enduro riding at the minute. So my fitness levels at the minute, I'm quite strong again. And like, I really judge myself on how I'm riding my enduro bike and my motocross bike. And I've been out twice a week for the last month, you know. January's rubbish. Pitch black, it's freezing. It's just nonsense, isn't it? Like back end of mid-Feb, I'm out doing a bit of training. I ride a lot. I ride a lot of my mates. And again, I go under the radar a little bit. And so I know now I'm back in that sweet spot.
It must be lovely, though, when you do go out for a ride with your mates, knowing you've got that skill set. It's like perhaps if you went for a kickabout with some kids down the park. You know, he can do what he wants. Or if I was to go for a run, maybe not so much now, but back in the day, I'll turn it on a bit here, show them young kids. I mean, it must be nice to have that skill set in your locker. You don't brag about it. I get it. You go under the radar. But I'd hate and love to go for a ride with you. Because you just say, see you later. Yeah.
It is good because you just show it now and again, you know, you're going along, everything's going good. Then you just do one little move and then just let them know, you know, just a little shot over the bow in it, you know what I mean? So like, by the way, you know, you're not going fast, mate. You think you're going fast, but you're not. It's like the track days and stuff. It's great. I love people at track days. You know, I love them all for all different reasons. You know, some's walking around with them banging out. Their egos are out of control. He's got everything. He's got tie warmers, new slicks. He's got the latest BMW, he's got whatever. Couldn't ride his way out of a bag, you know. And then you've got people who've never been on a track before who are great. I love them to bits, you know. You can see the white as a shape. They turn up, the white, and they're hitting the pants. And then by the end of the day, they're fucking off they go, you know. That is what the enjoyment I get out of that. I love it to bits. And then you get going with some of them, and they can ride, and they're natural, and they're good. And you get some who's, oh, well, if I had this, I had that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all polite with everybody. I'll never be like that. I'm thinking, you know, or whatever, but it's so good. I love to see people, you know, bring it out of them. You know, you can tell. I can tell within 30 seconds on a track, this guy, and I'll put behind him. I'll go, you know, I'm not going to spend any time with this fella. I'll go to the next one or whatever. And you know, because he's not going to listen to me. He knows. He's had a bike since he was 5 years old. He's fine. He doesn't need me. Great. Our next person. And then, so look, I love the people in the industry and sport. It's just so people. And then you go down Crane and Curves at Donington, you ride around the outside of somebody, and you know, you come in, there's not a bead of sweat on me, they're all blowing, puffing, panting. How do you do it? And I'm like, well, I've been at it 30 odd years. I've been racing. This is my 35th season coming up, so it's a long time, isn't it? And I were on a bike at 4 years old, so my dad put me on one. I had no choice. Put me in the Italian jet and kicked me up the arse and said, go and play around it field for half an hour.
You mentioned your dad then, and you mentioned your wife and your son and people watching you do that. So just to kind of circle back onto that little nod to your old man when you're about to take off, and you said about the awkward hug, which I think we all totally understand of that as fathers and sons, but that sense of, well, his little lad's 53 now, but his little lad's absolutely tear ass in round and showing people what he's done for 35 years. I'm not going to delve into the psychological relationship between yourself and your dad, but that sense of that's a beautiful thing for you to both to have shared, isn't it? For him to have seen.
Yeah, really nice. And shout out to my mum as well. You know, my mum's been an angel right through it all. Never, ever. Like, my mum is probably, I would say she's watched me set off every single race at the TT from 1996. It's weird. And Becky's mum's not with us anymore, bless her, but like them two are rocks, absolute rocks. And you know when your mother-in-law and your mum turn up at a race meet and you just want to murder them? For whatever reason, they just blended in.
Yeah.
Never, ever had one cross word with my mum or my mother-in-law, ever. At a race meeting, you know, the levels of stress.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
They just knew when to be there, knew when not to be there, knew when to take Maisie and the kids away. I mean, my lad's 24 now, he works at Monster, and my daughter's 15 yesterday, so they're growing up. But, like, my dad as well, yeah, he's getting a bit muddled up now, bless him, he's 70-odd. But he's going to TT, but he's a disorganised idiot. He's like, and he was a good racer himself, but he was just, he's always drinking and shagging and fighting and that. So he never really dedicated himself to anything. Do you know what I mean? He's always on piss. So like, if you've got a competitive bike, somebody bid him some money. If it's a bike dealer, you see, bike and car dealer. So he's a proper Swiss Tony crook. But I still love him to bits. And we have a great relationship. And like, I sent him a picture, weirdly, this week of me on my Kawasaki KO1S when I first started with my orange jacket on at Cadwell Park. You know, and he gets the picture, screenshots it, sticks it on his Facebook. dead proud, you know. McPint, and in one of his first race meetings at Cadwell, he calls me McPint. I'm like, oh, I'm John, my son. but he's funny, like, you know, he is funny. And he still tells me how to do it.
That's a dad's job, though, isn't it? He's looking out for you. But how lovely is that, that your dad is so proud of you? He'll stick it on Facebook. And you think the emotions your parents have been through and the in-laws over the years, where they're watching you on that start line with immense pride, but also the butterflies, please be safe, please be safe. I mean, that just shows that, I don't know your parents clearly, but they are great people to give you that freedom and that space to grow as a man and do a sport you love. Well, clearly, I'm sure your mum every year is petrified with you out there racing. But as I said, also the immense pride that her son is elite and he's achieved everything and beyond. I mean, you've given a lot of enjoyment to a lot of people.
It's got to be tough for him, hasn't it? Got to be tough. My dad was furious when I said I was going to go road racing, like pure road racing. He wanted me to road race, but not on short circuits. But when I first went to the Northwest in 94, because he was my mechanic, we were lad and dad, really. And I said, I'm going to the Northwest, and he refused to go. And I said, oh, well, I'm going to go myself. And I went, and then I did my first TT in 96. But as time goes by, it sort of heals itself. So, but I don't know. He said some real nice stuff to me over the years. Like when I won in 15, he's, you know, he was in the winner's enclosure. For a lot of my wins, you know, they're there for and a lot of other people as well. People that are silent people in your sport who've been there when you're on your hole and you're injured and it's tough, and at 3 o'clock in the morning there's nobody to talk to, especially when you're injured and you've, like, you know, it's a hard time. But you know, when you see that, it's the best feeling in the world. You know, when I won my 100th century TT, the senior, the first 130 mile an hour lap, it was like Murray Walker was in the winner's enclosure and Murray was crying. I was like, "Are you right, Murray?" Or what? I thought, I didn't know what had happened to him. Like, he's like bawling his eyes out. I'm like, "What's happened to Murray?" And he went, "That was amazing." He said, "I was here with my dad to witness the first 80 miles an hour lap, 90 miles an hour lap. I witnessed the first 100 mile an hour lap in 1957 with Bob McIntyre." And he said, "Never thought I'd be alive to see the first 130 mile an hour lap." And Bob Mack did 100 mile an hour in 1957. And in 2007, 50 years later, John Mack did the first 130. So he was just all emotions running out because he's a bike man. I know he's obviously affiliated to F1, but he's a huge bike fan, Murray. Absolute legend. So it's just little bits like that, you know, on the track is special. You get waved round and that. Not many people have been in that position where on the last lap people are waving the programs around you, and it's emotional, and it's, you know, so I'll get to the end, but it's an amazing feeling from inside, you know, when you can do that. You know, I won 7 senior TTs. It's only me and Mike Hailwood won 7, so you know, it's quite a special thing. So I wish I'd have met Mike Hailwood. One of the only, like, the only people, like, proper legends I haven't met, really. So I'd love to met him. But he got flipping killed in a car, didn't he, in 1982? 81 or 82, got killed there. Going to Chippy, yeah? All them racing. Wagon did a U-turn on him, and in that were him. Him and his daughter got killed.
My God. I mean, it's your affection for not only the sport, but the heritage of the sport, John, is just a wonderful thing to hear. The matter-of-fact way that your approach to life meshes with someone like a Murray Walker of bawling his eyes out, and you wondering what on earth is wrong with him. it's amazing. I mean, the final question that we have on each of our podcast chats is, it's about a fantasy ride. So, I mean, to dial yourself back from 130 miles an hour for 50,000 miles around the Isle of Man, we're looking for, and if Ewan and I were going with you, it would be way more sedate, and not me and him just running around with our bike. But can you just picture your fantasy ride? So we want to know where you'd be going, who you'd be going with, what you'd be riding, and potentially if it's your bag now that you like intercom systems, if you listen to any music.
Super mega curveball me there, boys. do you know what? I don't think there's anywhere any better than home, you know.
Yeah.
On a nice day. I think the UK is incredible. It's always peeing down, like, isn't it, normally? But when you... And I'm biased to where I live. I mean, more... if you're going around the lake on something with an intercom on, music, I love, weirdly, I'm a bit of a Queen fan.
It's not a weird thing. A good band.
I like a bit of Queen. You know, me and my daughter have a playlist, and it's probably not what you think for a 15-year-old. It's like, and I relate a lot of music to racing. I always remember TT songs and like Van Halen Jumper or like, you know, Sweet Child of Mine. Me and Becky got, we walked down the aisle to that.
Of course.
So it's just, unless it, you know, an old and pretty bit of tacky music, I'm not bothered about. The words in songs don't really mean too much. I don't, you know, like we don't go too deep, but and I'm not a really, I don't know, when I'm in my van, I don't, if I'm driving to somewhere, I have it quiet as well a lot of the time.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Know. I have nothing on, I just sit and just like.
Well, that could be a soundtrack. The soundtrack is silence. You don't have to listen to music.
Silence,
it could be
on
the driving around the lakes, listening to nothing but the air going past your helmet. What bike would you be on then? Would you be on a sports bike or something comfortable?
If I were 25, I'd be on a Fireblade in my knee down everywhere, trying to flipping pull trees up. You know what I mean? Now I'd probably be on a, I've got to be careful because I'm a brand ambassador, aren't I?
Honda Goldwing.
Yeah, not about a Goldwing. Maybe a Honda Hornet. Cool. They're quite a lively little thing. You know, I mean, Pussycat if you want it to be, or Action if you want it to be. But do you know what? If I was running around the lakes and I'm going for an ice cream, out of the 30-mile-hour, 40-mile-hour zones, and we're going up some twisties and we can just have a bit of a ding-dong.
Having got to know you over the space of, 45 minutes, and I say that in the sense of what you've given us, I mean, that really sums up our chat, really. An extraordinary man that's got a wonderful streak of ordinariness running through you. The fact that you can do what you do, but then still appreciate the smaller things, going for an ice cream, going and have a little tootle around, chatting rubbish with your mates and being able to really kind of show us, I mean, that you can be elite, that you can be one of the very, 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 very best. But to quote your words, you still can do all that without being a dick. Quite clearly, my friend, really do embody.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have met some dicks.
Haven't we all? I work with one.
Set myself up for that.
Yeah, probably the worst one I met was kicks a bag of wind about. But,
Well, sadly, John, that's about it for this week's full chat. Five Bike Show, as the UK's largest independent motorcycle insurance broker, Bike Show will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your annual bike, scooter, or moped insurance, and so much more.
I've got to say a huge thank you to today's guest, an absolutely down-to-earth, wonderful man. And that is why he is so popular, not just because of his skill set and how good he is, but you're a bloody good egg. Thanks very much to the one and only John McGuinness.
Pleasure.
Brilliant stuff, John. It's been an absolute pleasure, just to reiterate Ewan's words there. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. Until next time, goodbye.